This is VOA News. I'm Marissa Melton. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said in his nightly address Thursday that he had just signed decrees giving posthumous awards to three policemen who were killed by Russian mines on Wednesday in the Kherson region. He said Ukraine will be dealing with mines for years to come, among them buried landmines, tripwire mines, and mined buildings, cars, and infrastructure. He said mining Ukrainian territory is certainly one of the charges for which Russia will someday have to answer. One of the winners of this year's Nobel Peace Prize says there will be no lasting peace in Ukraine until there is justice and human rights. AP correspondent Karen Chamas has more.
The head of the Ukrainian Center for Civil Liberties, Oleksandra Matvichuk, said Russian President Vladimir Putin thinks he can do exactly what he wants. The human rights activist also said that she believes human rights and peace are inextricably linked. Matvichuk spoke to reporters on her arrival to Oslo to receive the Nobel Peace Prize with fellow human rights campaigners from Belarus and Russia. The prize was seen as a strong rebuke to the authoritarian rule of Putin. I'm Karen Chamas.
The Biden administration hopes to use a gathering of 50 African delegations in Washington to uplift and empower African institutions, citizens, and nations through discussions about challenges such as health, democracy, governance, climate change, and more. This according to senior administration officials on Thursday. Next week's U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit will spend 3 days in Washington discussing the challenges, needs, and hopes of one-fifth of the world's population spread over a landmass where as many as one-third of the world's languages are spoken. The summit begins on Tuesday. From Washington, you're listening to VOA News. Two women who lost their jobs at Twitter when billionaire Elon Musk took over are suing the company in federal court, claiming last month's abrupt mass layoffs disproportionately affected female employees. The discrimination lawsuit is the latest in a series of legal challenges over Musk's decimation of Twitter's workforce through mass layoffs and firings. Speaking to reporters outside the federal courthouse in San Francisco, lead attorney Shannon Liss Rorden says an analysis of layoffs shows clear gender bias.
57% of women were laid off, while 47% of men were laid off. And the statistical significance of those numbers is through the roof.
Days after the world's richest man bought the social media platform for $44 billion, the company told about half the employees on November 4th that they no longer had a job, but would get 3 months severance.
We got the power.
Hundreds of journalists and other employees at the New York Times are on a 24-hour walkout, the first strike of its kind at the newspaper in more than 40 years. Striking reporters and editors rallied outside the newspaper's offices while the company relied on non-union staff to keep up with news coverage. Nicole Hannah-Jones with the New York Times Magazine said the workers love the Times.
We are here because we love the New York Times and because workers are the heart of the New York Times.
Members of the News Guild of New York say they're fed up with bargaining that has dragged on since their last contract expired. In March of 2021, negotiations took place Tuesday and Wednesday, but the sides remain far apart on issues including wages and remote work policies. The U.S. House of Representatives gave final approval Thursday to a bill that protects same-sex and interracial marriages. The measure passed 258 to 169 and now heads to President Biden's desk to be signed into law. A judge has sentenced former Theranos executive Ramesh Sunny Balwani to nearly 13 years in prison for his role in the country's blood testing hoax. The punishment announced Wednesday was slightly longer than that given last month to the CEO, who was his romantic partner and accomplice in one of Silicon Valley's biggest scandals. Balwani was convicted in July of fraud and conspiracy in connection with bogus medical technology that duped investors and endangered patients. His sentencing came less than 3 weeks after Elizabeth Holmes received more than 11 years in prison. And the Biden administration filed a complaint Thursday aimed at blocking tech giant Microsoft's $69 billion bid to buy Call of Duty games maker Activision over concerns the deal would deny rivals access to popular games. Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Today is Friday, December 9th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedor Foy in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, the U.S. expresses confidence that Sweden and Sweden will join the Western military alliance.
All 30 allies signed the accession protocols. 28 of the 30, of course, have ratified them, and we are working toward the additional ratifications, Turkey and Hungary.
An American star athlete is released in a prison swap with Russia.
This is a day we've worked toward for a long time. We never stopped pushing for her release. It took painstaking and intense negotiations, and I want to thank all the hardworking public servants across my administration.
And action resumes at the Qatar World Cup with Morocco facing Portugal and France battling England. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken on Thursday said he's convinced the United States will be able to call Sweden and Finland NATO allies soon. He also said Turkey's concerns about the two nations joining the alliance are being addressed. Blinken, speaking at a press briefing following meetings at the State Department with his Swedish and Finnish counterparts, said the two nations are already integrating into the work of the alliance.
All 30 allies signed the accession protocols. 28 of the 30, of course, have ratified them, and we are working toward the additional ratifications, Turkey and Hungary. And I am convinced, based on everything I know, that we will soon be able to call both countries formally our allies. I've got to say I'm further convinced of that by my own recent visit to Bucharest, where we were all around the same table. As it happens, I sat next to both of our colleagues there. Finland and Sweden are already integrating into our work. Turkey has raised concerns that are best addressed directly by Finland and Sweden, with NATO's assistance as necessary. And as you've heard from both of my colleagues, they've had a very good and productive process, working directly with Turkey to try to address the concerns. That resulted in a memorandum of understanding that is being implemented, and concrete steps have been taken by Sweden and by Finland to make good on the commitments that they've undertaken in this process. All of that is moving forward, and again, I have every expectation that both will formally become members soon.
That's U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken. Brittney Griner, the American female basketball star who was held for months in Russian prison on drug charges, was released Thursday in a prison swap for international arms dealer Victor Boot. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Widas-Kuwara has the report.
The WNBA star Brittney Griner was released after months held in Russia, President Joe Biden announced from the White House Thursday morning.
This is a day we've worked toward for a long time. We never stopped pushing for her release. It took painstaking and intense negotiations, and I want to thank all the hardworking public servants across my administration who worked tirelessly to secure her release. I also want to thank the UAE for helping us facilitate Brittany's return, because that's where she landed.
Griner was released in a one-for-one prisoner swap for international arms dealer Victor Boot. She is safe, she is on a plane, she is on her way home, Biden first announced in a tweet, which included photos of himself in the Oval Office with Griner's wife, Sherelle Griner.
Today my family is whole, but as you all are aware, there are so many other families who are not whole. And so BG's not here to say this, but I will gladly speak on her behalf and say that BG and I will remain committed to the work of getting every American home, including Paul, whose family is in our hearts today as we celebrate BG being home.
Retired U.S. Marine Paul Whelan has been imprisoned in Russia for nearly 4 years on espionage charges that the U.S. says are false.
And while we have not yet succeeded in securing Paul's release, we are not giving up. We will never give up. We remain in close touch with Paul's family, the Whelan family, and my thoughts and prayers are with them today. They have to have such mixed emotions today. And we'll keep negotiating in good faith for Paul's release. I guarantee that.
Griner was detained in Russia in February. She will now undergo a medical evaluation as a standard procedure for freed U.S. prisoners. Biden said that she's expected to return to the U.S. within 24 hours. Patsy Widas-Kuwara, VOA News at the White House.
Saudi Arabia and China showcased deepening ties with a series of strategic deals on Thursday during a visit by President Xi Jinping. One such deal is with tech giant Huawei, whose growing foray into the Gulf region has raised U.S. security concerns. Chris Dingham of Reuters reports.
Hailing what he called a new era in ties with the Arab world, Chinese President Xi Jinping signed a series of strategic deals with Saudi Arabia on Thursday. The leader from China, the world's biggest energy consumer, received a lavish welcome from the oil-rich nation. Xi's car was escorted to the king's palace by members of the Saudi Royal Guard riding Arabian horses and carrying Chinese and Saudi flags. Xi also met with Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, the de facto ruler of Saudi Arabia. The two stepped into a pavilion as a military band played the country's national anthems. The display stood in stark contrast to the low-key welcome extended to U.S. President Joe Biden in July. Ties between the U.S. and Saudi Arabia have been strained by the kingdom's energy policy and the 2018 murder of U.S.-based Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi, which overshadowed the awkward July visit. On Thursday, King Salman signed a comprehensive strategic partnership agreement with Xi that, according to state media, included 34 deals for investment. One of the deals included Chinese tech giant Huawei, involving cloud computing and building high-tech complexes in Saudi cities. The agreement was struck despite U.S. security concerns over using the Chinese firm's technology amid Huawei's growing foray into the Gulf region. Saudi Arabia and other Gulf states have said that they would not choose sides between global powers and were diversifying partners to serve national economic and security interests.
That's Chris Dinham of Reuters. Australia has reacted with dismay at the early release of the main bomb maker in the 2002 Bali bombings. 202 people died in the terrorist attack, including dozens of Australians. Umar Patek, a member of the Al-Qaeda-linked Jamaat Islamiyah militant group, was jailed for 20 years in 2012 for his part in the attack. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
88 Australians were killed when extremists attacked two nightclubs in the Kuta district of Bali, Indonesia, in October 2002. There were victims from many countries, including Indonesia, Britain, Germany, and the United States. It was the largest loss of Australian lives due to an act of terrorism. Umar Patek helped to build the car bomb that tore through the Sari Club. He spent 9 years on the run before being jailed for 20 years in 2012. Indonesian authorities have said he's been released early from prison because of good behaviour. They believe he's reformed after participating in de-radicalisation activities during his sentence. Australia had lobbied Indonesia in an effort to keep him behind bars, and survivors of the blasts told Australian media Thursday that it was fanciful to think Patek had changed. The government in Canberra said Australians had every right to be disappointed and concerned about Patek's early release on parole. Energy Minister Chris Bowen told the Australian Broadcasting Corporation Thursday that Canberra now wants the Bali bomb maker to be put under careful surveillance.
Look, I think all Australians would be concerned about this, and the Australian government is concerned about this on their behalf, and we have made, as you would expect, appropriate representations to the Indonesian government. Early release is not uncommon in Indonesia, so our particular representations have gone to seeking reassurances that he'll continue to be monitored and appropriate protections will be in place.
Bali bombing mastermind Hambali, also known as Ensep Nijaman, is being held at the US facility at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba and has been awaiting trial since 2006. Three other key conspirators were executed in November 2008. Others were killed by Indonesian police before facing trial. A suicide bomber detonated a device inside Paddy's Bar in Bali, while a car bomb destroyed the Sari Club nearby, killing more than 200 people and leaving many others injured. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
In other news, the U.S. House of Representatives on Thursday gave final congressional approval to legislation that provides federal recognition for same-sex marriages, a measure born out of concern that the Supreme Court could reverse its support for legal recognition of such relationships. The House vote was 258-169, with all of the chamber's Democrats and 39 Republicans voting in favor, though 169 of the chamber's Republicans voted against it, and one voted present. The measure now goes to Democratic President Joe Biden's desk for signature into law, the Respect for Marriage Act, as it is called, won Senate approval last month. You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Fighting between the DRC's military and rebels has since March displaced nearly 400,000 people, with most IDP camps in Yurogongo territory, where health centers are struggling to cope. Ruth Umar Esther visited a medical center in Yurogongo and has this report.
Maendeleo Private Health Center in Munigi, a transit camp for internally displaced people in the Democratic Republic of Congo's Nyiragongo territory, is overwhelmed. The UN says fighting since March between the military and M23 movement rebels in North Kivu province has forced about 390,000 people to flee, with 182,000 living in IDP camps, almost all of them in Nyiragongo. Dr. Jacques Muhungu says the number of patients they see each day has tripled.
Here is our stock. There is nothing here. We do not know how to survive ourselves. As you see, it is empty. We have no more needles. Tomorrow, if they come, we don't know how to survive ourselves.
With few resources, displaced people who need treatment are often not able to pay for it. Vivian Zainabo fled clashes in her village of Kibumba 3 months ago with her husband and four children. Her husband got lost in the chaos. She has not been able to contact him and doesn't know if he's still alive.
When I came here, I was shaking. I was weak, and I think it was malaria. My knees were hurting, and I could not walk. I have no means to pay for health care. The doctor himself will know how to help us.
The Congolese government says it is providing free health care for the IDPs, but health authorities in North Kivu say the need is too great. Peace talks in Nairobi this month, built on a ceasefire agreed in Angola late November between the DRC and Rwanda, which Kinshasa accuses of supporting the rebels and which it denies. M23 rebels, who were not invited to the talks, announced Tuesday they would begin withdrawing from territories they seized in the fighting and would uphold the truce. The Angola-brokered ceasefire had lasted just 1 week, with both sides blaming the other and civilians caught in the middle. Ruth Omar Esther for VOA News, Goma, Democratic Republic of Congo.
Thank you, Ruth. And the WHO reports COVID-19 cases are continuing their downward spiral in Africa. But once the pandemic is not over, nations must remain vigilant. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Following a recent four-week resurgence of COVID-19, cases and deaths once again are dropping in Africa. Since this month-long spike ended on November 20th, the World Health Organization has recorded slightly more than 12,300 new cases and 50 deaths. The WHO Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, says these numbers are at their lowest levels since the start of the pandemic in 2020.
Despite the recent uptick, there is hope that Africa will be spared the challenges of the previous 2 years when surging cases marred the holiday season for many. While the current efforts keep the pandemic within control, we are carefully monitoring its evolution. We must remain vigilant and be ready to adopt more stringent preventive measures if necessary.
Moeti says investments in COVID-19 management over the last 3 years are paying off, and the region is better able to cope with the virus. She notes the number of intensive care unit beds has increased and medical oxygen production has grown. She says Africa also has strengthened its laboratory capacity, including conducting genomic sequencing. But she adds worrisome gaps in vaccination remain, especially among the most vulnerable. She says it is urgent that health workers be vaccinated to protect them from getting severe illness and dying. Other high-risk groups who must be vaccinated, she says, include the elderly, people living with HIV, and those who have potentially life-threatening conditions such as diabetes, obesity, and cardiovascular disease.
These, in our view, are the groups in which we need to really push accelerating coverage, increasing the proportion of people that are covered and reaching the highest level of coverage possible, while also, of course, making sure that those of them who took their first series of vaccines early also are boosted, so to sustain the level of immunity, particularly protect them against severe illness.
WHO reports only 26% of Africans are fully vaccinated against COVID-19. Regional Director Moeti says greater coverage can be achieved and more people reached by integrating COVID-19 vaccination into routine immunization and primary health care services. As the pandemic winds down, she says COVID-19 should be brought out of an emergency response mode and integrated into routine health care. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And in sports, action resumes Friday at the Qatar World Cup with Morocco facing Portugal and France battling it out with England for a place in the semi-finals. Some fans who travelled to Qatar to watch their national team compete in the World Cup say they're having trouble getting tickets at the venue. This is forcing many to pay exorbitant prices to watch matches. Lakopo Luis reports from Doha, Qatar.
No ticket available now. No
Hardcore football fans are in Qatar to experience the World Cup firsthand and cheer on their country's team. But many say they're having trouble getting reasonably priced tickets. VOA reporters witnessed the problem firsthand, failing after numerous attempts to purchase tickets that were supposedly available. This has forced some fans to go to resale portals. The only authorized ones are on FIFA's own site. But there are others like Ticombo and StubHub International where fans can find tickets, but at a much higher cost. Depending on the match, they could be paying up to $1,000, 6 or 7 times more than the original ticket price. Some are also buying from scalpers, people who buy tickets then resell them at higher prices outside the stadiums. But not only are those more expensive, sometimes those tickets are fake. FIFA's website only says that last-minute sales of World Cup tickets are processed in real time and are allocated on a first-come, first-served basis. While fans say it's frustrating, many admit they are willing to pay far more than the official price to be able to support their teams. And high prices won't stop this group of female fans we spoke to after Morocco's win over Canada. Even those who manage to buy tickets at official prices will be paying 40% more than 4 years ago at World Cup in Russia, according to a Keller Sports study. The report says these World Cup games in Qatar are the most expensive ever. Jacopo Luzzi, VOA News, Doha, Qatar.
Sporty greetings. This is VOA's Sunny Young. Brighten your day by tuning in the sunny side of sports, Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. You can also follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, and voaafrica.com. It's the sunny side of sports right here on The Voice of America.
Hi, I'm Kim Lewis. Join me and our panel of journalists as we discuss the top stories of the week, including the outcome of the highly publicized and tight U.S. Senate race in Georgia between Democratic Senator Raphael Warnock and Republican challenger Herschel Walker. The outcome of the contest will shape the balance of power in the Senate over the next 2 years. This and more on Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
This is Science in a Minute.
Saturn's Titan is the only moon in the solar system to have its own thick atmosphere, along with rivers, lakes, and seas on its surface. Scientists are said to be delighted to examine images of Titan that were captured on November 5th by the new James Webb Space Telescope. According to NASA, the JWST observations allow for the study of the moon's atmosphere, its gassy composition, weather patterns, and since it can see through Titan's haze, the bright and dark patches on its surface. Scientists thought the images showed clouds in the moon's atmosphere, so they contacted colleagues at the Keck Observatory in Hawaii to conduct follow-up observations. The Keck team later did confirm that there were clouds located at the same locations as what Webb observed. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Encounter. Next,
an update on U.S.-Africa relations. President Joe Biden hosts leaders from across Africa in Washington next week for the U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit. The summit will underscore the importance of U.S.-Africa relations and increased cooperation on bolstering democracy, fostering trade and investment, and combating terrorism. The U.S.-Africa Leaders Summit next, this Saturday and Sunday, on The Voice of America.
Go beyond the daily headlines with VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. Each weekday, join us as we put the latest developments into a global context with stories, interviews, and analysis. Listen online at voanews.com/flashpoint or in your favorite podcast player.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com and check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinua Adofo in Washington. Have a wonderful weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA, has adopted a resolution declaring it essential and urgent that Iran fulfill its legal obligations under the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty Safeguards Agreement without delay. Those obligations include explaining the origin of uranium particles found at three undeclared locations in Iran and informing the IAEA of the current location of the nuclear material and/or contaminated equipment. Without such information, the IAEA said, the agency cannot confirm the correctness and completeness of Iran's declarations under its NPT safeguards agreement. The resolution, adopted by the IAEA Board of Governors on November 17th, is the second such resolution this year, after the first resolution in June. Instead of complying with calls for cooperation and transparency, Iran removed dozens of cameras used by the agency to monitor Iran's nuclear sites. After the November resolution, Iran indicated it would cancel an up-and-coming technical meeting with the IAEA. At a press briefing, IAEA Director General Rafael Grossi noted that it has been a very long time since the IAEA has had a view of what is happening in Iran. There is a mass of activity about which we don't know anything, he said. In a joint statement, the foreign ministries of France, Germany, the United Kingdom, and the United States said that with the latest resolution, the IAEA has sent a clear message that Iran must take the actions specified without delay. Iran must provide technically credible explanations for the presence of uranium particles identified at three undeclared locations in Iran and clarify the whereabouts of the related nuclear material and/or contaminated equipment, they said. As we have made clear, if Iran does this and the Director General is able to report that the unresolved safeguards issues are no longer outstanding, the board could then close its consideration of this matter. We hope Iran takes this opportunity to cooperate with the IAEA in good faith toward closing these outstanding matters so that no further board actions on these issues will be necessary.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.